Welcome to the Uplift Chronicles, where we journey through the powerful stories of those who inspire, uplift, and make a difference. I am your host, Kofi Dake. In each episode, we dive deep into the lives, accomplishments, and the diverse backgrounds of remarkable individuals, particularly those of Afro heritage, who are changing the world one story at a time. Whether you are seeking motivation, connection, or a celebration of culture, you are definitely in the right place. So sit back and relax, and let's explore how lives have been uplifted, both in Africa and across the globe. This is the Uplift Chronicles.
Our guest today is Dr. Kelechi Lawrence. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you, Kofi. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being here. So I'm just going to say a few things about you based on your biography that I've read on you. All right. Okay. So Dr. Kelechi is a seasoned pharmaceutical professional with over 15 years of experience in global project management, business operations, and pharmaceutical stadium management. Based in Wilmington, Delaware, he has held leadership positions in business development, clinical trial management, project management, and medical affairs at global pharmaceutical companies, including Endo Pharmaceuticals, KPS Life, and GlaxoSmithKline, GSK. Dr. Kelechi also holds a PhD in molecular pharmacology from the Medical University of South Carolina, completed a postdoctoral fellowship at the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Columbia University, and has an MBA in marketing and finance from the University of Delaware. He's a Six Sigma professional, certified and fluent in both English and Igbo, hails from Nigeria and resides in the United States. He also led successfully a trade medical mission to Nigeria, serves as a founding advisor to the Association of Good Clinical Practice in Nigeria, AGCPN, and is a member of the Nigerian Clinical Trial Technical Working Group. He also served on the transition team of Governor John Carney of Delaware. He currently chairs the Delaware African and Caribbean Affairs Commission and has received numerous professional and civic honors. I personally had the pleasure of meeting you, Dr. Kelechi, through the Delaware African Caribbean Affairs in your capacity as a dynamic and progressive president or chairperson. I describe you as a very down-to-earth gentleman who has exhibited an open-door policy working with diverse groups and individuals. For that, I say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's good to certainly be with you, Kofi, and it's been a delight meeting you and working with you.
Yes, sir. All right. Tell us more about your responsibility and experiences to both Endo Pharmaceutical, GSK, and also KPS Life.
So, as a pharmaceutical professional over the last, it's been a little while. I mean, 15 years is just recent, right? So I've been around for a lot longer than that. I got into pharmaceutical industry as a result of sort of a childhood interest. When you're growing up, things that you see around you, you learn about you around you, you get exposed to, can trigger a certain kind of thought process in you. And the thing that I'm speaking specifically about here is the fact that in Africa, as in most developing countries, you have basically two forms of medical practice, if you will. You have the traditional medical practice, depending on where you are and what you call it, and then you have, of course, the Western, where you go to medical school, study, and then begin to practice. But I'm sure you know, back home, we have people who do what we call traditional medicine, they also undergo training. I was always fascinated by what kind of training did they undergo, and all that, in order to be able to do it. How do they know what, you know, which plant or parts of the plant and things of that nature held a medicinal value that they wanted to use to treat their patients. So it is that kind of curiosity that kind of got me into how drugs work, how they do what they do and stuff. And then, of course, pharmacology, as you may know, is a study of the mechanism of drug action. So I got into that. And then I realized that, contrary to what many people may be thinking, there is actually some dependence on the Western medicine, on traditional medicine, if you want. Right. Okay. There is, particularly from a drug development standpoint. So in order for us to identify the active ingredient that exhibits a particular biological activity and then work on the mechanism of action, a lot of times you have to know that there is something in here that is doing that has a certain interesting biological activity, and then you go after it, you identify it, and then you characterize it and things of that nature. So that's the kind of thinking from childhood that kind of got me into going into pharmacology. And of course, we don't practice traditional medicine here in America. And, you know, so I went to school, and in order to practice the trade, of course, you have to work in the pharmaceutical industry. And so that took me to GlaxoSmithKline, to Endo Pharmaceuticals, and, you know, KPS, where I actually really enjoyed my career and the things that I've been able to achieve. Which includes being part of a team that has developed some drugs that are currently being used by people. You know, as a matter of fact, I have used, you know, some of the vaccines, if you will, that I've been involved in developing. Nice. It's really kind of interesting, you know?
Yes. Yeah. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Actually, that takes me to one other question I had for you, just reading about your biography. So I want to talk about your successful trade and medical mission to Nigeria, right? So you are a founding advisor to the Association of Good Clinical Practice in Nigeria, abbreviated AGCPN, and also a member of the Nigerian Clinical Trial Technical Working Group, okay? So according to Science for Africa Foundation, and I was reading on this, so a network of African clinical trials community, they established some clinical trial sites and laboratories, okay, under the clinical trial community African network, which they abbreviate as CTCAN. But according to that paper I was reading, Africa accounts for 70% of the global population, right? But based 25% of the global burden of disease. So, however, only 3% of the global clinical trials is conducted in Africa. I know you just touched on that a little bit. So why do we need these clinical trials in Africa and Caribbean nations? What are the implications of treating Africans with medications developed through clinical trials performed outside of Africa, or the African health system?
That's an excellent question. That is an excellent, excellent question. There's a lot in there, but let me try to unpack a little bit. So the reality is, just as you said, Africa accounts for what? About 45% of global disease burden, but less than 3% of clinical trials are done in Africa.
Yes, and 25% of the global burden of disease.
Exactly. But less than 3% of clinical trials are done in Africa. Yes. And the reason for that is really one of the things that motivated me to support, to do the kind of work that we did with AGCPN, Association of Good Clinical Practice, Trial Practice in Nigeria. A good friend of mine, professor at University of Nigeria in those days, kind of, she used to come here, in fact, with her family on vacation and stuff like that. And then she saw that, wow, you know, a lot of these global pharmaceutical companies do not do clinical trials in Africa, in most African countries, Nigeria in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, and she started asking questions about why is that? We have people, just as you said, 45% of the global disease burden, they should be coming here and doing these trials here. Then I explained to her that, in fact, you're right, that they should be coming. But the reason they don't want to come and they are not coming is because you do not have the infrastructure to conduct clinical trials safely. Because right. clinical trial is a study that you're using human beings, and that's basically what it is, right? And so in order for a molecule to become a drug in your pharmacy, it has to undergo several evaluations, right? Safety evaluations, efficacy evaluations, and so on and so forth. So particularly safety, as you're looking at safety, you know, you don't want people exposed to things that is going to hurt them.
Right.
Even though generally though, and this is the thing, it's a risk benefit analysis. You want that risk benefit analysis to be overwhelmingly in favor of the benefit as opposed to the risk. So every drug that you take has a risk.
Okay.
Right. And that risk is reflected in what you ultimately refer to as side effects. Exactly. Okay. So every drug has a side effect. You know, some of them you have to take a huge amount before the side effects begin to become manifest. But the fact of the matter is the clinical trial evaluation is really evaluating that molecule, the safety of it, the efficacy is its ability to treat what you want it to treat, you know, and at what dosage, right? So the smaller the quantity you have to use to effect a particular benefit, the better you are. So, so what I told my friend, which was true then, still is true now, and we try to do our work within AGCPN and even the Nigerian Clinical Trial Technical Working Group, was that, first of all, you need trained people to conduct the trials. You know, you need physicians, you need pharmacists, you need nurses, you need technicians, because as you're doing clinical trial, and you know, samples are being withdrawn from the clinical trial subjects, right? And the samples are being withdrawn, blood samples are withdrawn, and then to analyze a whole bunch of different things, you know, how the drug is being distributed in your body, what it's doing to your body, how your body is eliminating it, and all of that. You know, so some drugs are eliminated through this skin, some are eliminated through, most of them are urine, some are liver, some are lungs, you breathe them out and stuff. So in drawing that blood, we determine the routes through which the body gets rid of the drug, which is also very important. So you need people to do that kind of work.
Right. Okay, so that would trigger a question for me. Uh-huh. So since you've been there, you led this team for this mission, okay. So have you seen improvements in these sectors, mostly for infrastructure, but also for the manpower and the resources that you referred to, right? There are a lot of trained doctors, researchers, and et cetera, who are Africans in the United States. What has been the standing block for most of them going home and actually trying to help in this particular sector?
Yeah, again, and another excellent question. So just like you need trained people, and we have a lot of trained people, even though we need more, by the way, so a lot of our trained, and this is the unfortunate thing that is happening to a lot of African countries. We spend a lot of time training our healthcare providers, you know, throughout the healthcare value chain, and then they end up leaving to go elsewhere. The doctors come here, the nurses come here, they go to Europe and think the pharmacists and so on and so forth. But anyway, so the fact of the matter is that healthcare delivery is actually a collaborative effort. So even though the doctor will be the person that you see that says you need XYZ because you have a headache, but that XYZ, that drug that you need, is going to be delivered by a pharmacist, right? A trained pharmacist has to be able to, administer the drug to you. The nurses have to be people who, in the case if you are on admission or something, they take care of you in the hospital. And of course, you have different kinds of doctors treating different things. So the fact of the matter is that it is a collaborative effort. And yes, that collaborative effort, if you have too many doctors and you don't have enough nurses, you're not going to be able to deliver quality care.
Yes. And, okay. And I would assume the infrastructure also, where the politicians or the local government can also support in building those.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem we have, right? So part of the problem we have is that we don't have the physical infrastructure. The physical infrastructure is the building, the brick and mortar, the hospital, the clinic, the pharmacy. And so that's the physical infrastructure. You need that. You also need the human resources, that's in people, the people that I've been telling you about, technicians, nurses, pharmacists, doctors, and so on and so forth. But another thing that you need, which is one of the things that has been a major impediment for a lot of global pharmaceutical companies coming into Africa, is regulatory infrastructure. Regulatory means that, I'm sure you've heard about the FDA. So the FDA makes sure that the study is done in a way that doesn't harm people. In order to ensure that, you need to have different processes, protocols and things, regulations in terms of how to do certain things with that study, a clinical trial study group. Unfortunately, a lot of these things do not exist in a lot of African countries. I can tell you that in Nigeria, as an example, I was involved, in fact, in writing the regulatory protocol that is, in fact, still being used in Nigeria today. So that technical working group that I was a part of, we had to go write regulations that, institutional review boards, as an example, can use, that people who want to do clinical trials can use. Because the reality is this, and you have to look at it from the standpoint of the global pharmaceutical company. If I'm doing a study in Ghana, as an example, and somebody dies in Ghana because they have been exposed to my drug or whatever, regardless of what the reason was for the cause of that death, I don't want to see something like that. But no, we do know that, people can die or have adverse reactions to drugs, which is why you do it in a controlled environment and stuff. But as a company, I want to make sure that all the systems are in place, or the systems that are in place are robust enough to make sure that I can ensure the safety of the clinical trial group. And because we don't have that in a lot of African countries, most global pharmaceutical companies don't want to risk it. Because if they come to Nigeria and somebody dies, it's going to impact the study that they're doing right here in New York, in Pennsylvania, in whatever. So that's a major, major impediment. So because we don't have the infrastructure, that's why they do not come. So we have the people, you need the people, you need a physical, you need regulatory infrastructure and all of those things working together in order to give them the confidence to actually come and do studies.
Okay. I'm assuming this has been communicated to a lot of African governments or stakeholders in decision-making roles, right? So what has been the impediment?
Absolutely. So the reality is this. It has been communicated. And the reason I'm laughing is that even though it has been communicated, and some of them truly want to do something, they want to make a difference. But again, just like I'm telling you that, healthcare delivery is a collaborative effort, governance is also a collaborative effort. So as an example, the governor or even the president may want to do the right thing. But if the people under the president either don't understand or don't want that thing done, rest assured that thing is not going to be done. That's just the reality of it. So the president can give an order or say, maybe not even an order, but say, okay, I want this done. The people under the president, if they do not identify with the president's vision and help to execute the order of the president, is just going to be that simple order that ends up not being implemented. And that's part of the challenge that we are facing in a whole bunch of different areas, not just only healthcare, but even in power, in the power sector, in wherever we are. You know, we need people understanding the reasons why certain things need to be in place for everybody's benefit, not just for 1% or two people, but for everybody's benefit. And that is, again, something that is very lacking in a lot of African countries. So it's not like we don't have leaders who understand these things or who hear about them. As a matter of fact, we do have leaders who understand, but there are still major impediments. There's a financial impediment, right? Research, as I'm sure you probably know, is an expensive undertaking. Okay. Yes. So to build the physical infrastructure, just to build the infrastructure alone is an expensive undertaking. It is one that is worthwhile, by the way. So again, just because it's expensive doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And there are some people who want to do it, but the problem is that, you know, we haven't had enough committed people governing and driving these things, which is part of why they haven't happened. So there is that problem. So they also don't have the money to, even when they want to do something, you don't have the money to do it on scale, okay, at a level that is going to have significant impact and stuff. So it's a challenge, it's an ongoing one, and one that, again, I have to call upon the diaspora to assist, right? And that's what people should be doing. The diaspora should actually be looking into helping to set up these systems. One of the things that I am a big advocate for is that we have a lot of doctors. Let me just look at them. I'm not picking on them, but let's just look at doctors as an example. We have a lot of Nigerian doctors who are here in the United States, in North America, in Canada, right? And again, building a hospital is not a joke, something that's going to cost a lot of money. But I also know and I feel that many of these doctors can come together, 5, 10, 20, right? Form a cooperative or something, come together, raise 10, 20, $50 million, because that's how much it's going to cost to build a viable hospital, right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It come together. So I'm not looking at somebody doing it by themselves. It becomes weighty for you. But if you come together, you will share expertise, you will share risk, you will make it easier for each one of you that is involved in this undertaking. But when you're finished, you will have done something at scale which can have profound impact on society. So why our doctors, healthcare providers are not doing that is something, again, in itself is a problem. Our people don't like to cooperate with each other, unfortunately, right? And so
there are some bodies that we know, like Doctors Without Borders, Engineers Without Borders. Do you think there is a lack of participation for doctors of African origin or Afro origin in these entities? Because I know Engineers Without Borders and Doctors Without Borders, they go to various most developing countries to try and help out.
Correct. So, I mean, again, our doctors, in fact, I have a good friend of mine who goes around the world, again, volunteering, participating and sharing his services for free to help people. So I don't have any study that says that our people are not, we don't have enough of them doing those kinds of things. But what I'm talking about really is, again, working together in a way that will impact society. Healthcare, as an example, you know, without your health, you absolutely have nothing. You know that. A lot of us say that. Yes. You know, and a healthy population is really a treasure for the country that owns that healthy population. So this is an investment. Consider it an investment. But it is an investment that is capital intensive. Right. And that's why I'm saying people need to come together, you know, share the risk so that they make it easier on each other, and then build these hospitals, because you need these hospitals. Now, on the side of government, you can go and build a $50 million hospital in Nigeria, as an example, or in Ghana. But if there are no roads, right, for people to come there, they may not come.
They might not come, yes.
They might not come. So the government has its role to play in this as well. So, but there needs to be that dialogue going on so that we understand that, yes, government has a role to play. We, as, you know, the nationals of these countries also have a role to play. And it is in playing that role that eventually we get to develop our countries and our systems. We need all these things. We need all these services. But somehow, we haven't come to the realization that it's going to take us partnering with each other, as well as government and other entities, in order to make these changes. So
that's
talking about them until more people, enough people, realize and are willing to take a risk.
Yes, that's a laudable advice that you've given on that. Yes. So shifting into the social impact, as you spoke of. You chair the Delaware African and Caribbean Affairs Commission, okay? So for our listeners, kindly explain the mission of the Delaware African and Caribbean Affairs Commission.
So yes, that is a commission that I chair that grew out of the organization Delaware Africa Coalition that you see the logo that I'm using as my background. And therein, I come back to what I have been talking about. So my vision really is simple. It is a daunting vision, I'm aware, but hey, you know, somebody first figured, okay, we're going to go to the moon. Before you know it, they went to the moon. Okay. Somebody else decided, why go to the moon? Stop at the moon. Let's go to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? They went to Mars. They can fly stuff to Mars. So I guess what I'm saying to you is, it starts with somebody saying, we want this, let's do this. Nobody said it's going to be easy. It shouldn't be easy. In fact, as President Kennedy said, we do these things not because they are easy. We do them because they are hard.
Yes. So
for me, the vision really is to help to transform Africa from America, leveraging the government of America, okay, to influence our leaders into doing the right thing. That's really it.
Nice.
And that can be done. But again, not many of us understand it or realize it. So as you can imagine, a lot of these African countries, they want to be friends with America for good reasons, right? So those of us who live in Delaware, we have good relationships with our elected officials, and we have come to learn that they also care about us and they want to help us. So we want to leverage those relationships to influence the way our people do things back in Africa, not just Nigeria, Ghana, but I'm talking Africa.
Right. The scope of this mission also include Caribbean countries.
Correct. Absolutely. Because again, you know, contrary to what some people may be thinking, so Caribbean is closer to America, North America than Africa is, but you still have poverty. For instance, I have one of my friends actually established a hospital in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a cardiac center in Jamaica. So they have the same needs. So the Caribbean countries, a lot of them have exactly the same needs that we have in Africa. Okay, and that's part of why. Because after all, we are all the same. They happen to be part of the African diaspora. They originated, their ancestors or great, 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 great ancestors originated from Africa. So they're like us, they are us, you know. And it turns out that for one reason or the other, we all still have the same challenges. And that's part of why we are thinking, okay, by banding together, maybe we can help each other. Maybe there are things we can learn from them that can help us in Africa, or there may be things they can learn from us that can help them in the Caribbean. But since all of us are here in the United States, let us also learn things about the system that we could take home and use to improve wherever we come from. That's okay. Really what the idea is.
Great idea. So through this course, you were able to champion the establishment of the Delaware Global African Center. This is designed to be a leading international trade and diplomatic advocacy hub. Kindly share experiences and how all this started and how this center affects livelihood of people in the community and globally, because it has, it says the Global African Center. Is it accessible to people who reside in Africa and the Caribbean, and how?
Sure. So the Global African Center essentially is a part of the vision, you know, to help develop, lift Africa and the Caribbean out of extreme poverty, because a lot of our people are still in too much poverty. So what the Global African Center will do, because if you now have a place, you have a hub, you have a place, you have an operating place where you can be doing things, then you need a physical infrastructure, then you have an opportunity, you know, to be implementing whatever vision that you have for your people. And that's the concept here. So we feel that we need a physical place where people can meet, discuss, dialogue, do things, and, you know, leverage the knowledge they have, the opportunities they have to then drive the things they want to do. So the Delaware Global African Center hasn't yet been built, but I'm hoping that in the next 12 to 18 months, that will become history, because we will have a place. It is right now, the process is going on, you know, to really do the building, if you will. And the goal is, once it is ready, then it provides us a physical place. First and foremost, a gathering place, because sometimes you need people to gather, look at each other, talk to each other, learn about each other, and then decide, okay, we're going to work with each other in this realm, in this way, and so on and so forth. So that's one of the things. So we have very high hopes for it, and we are getting actually a lot of support for it from our elected officials here in Delaware, from our local leaders all the way to our federal leaders. They are supporting this concept because they see it. Some of these people, like the people in Congress, the people in Senate, they travel to Africa. They know the challenges that we have over there. And so we have related some of these things to them, and they identify, and they are showing support, not just showing support and saying, oh, we support this. They are showing support by actually appropriating money.
Yes.
To help us achieve this dream. So that is happening, and you know, we are hoping that it is only a matter of time before it materializes.
Okay. So yeah. So so obviously, the community, Africans and Caribbean people, are some of the major stakeholders in this Global African Center. Are there other stakeholders in this? And also, you did mention you've had a major support from elected offices. I know Matt Myers has been very instrumental. You've worked extensively with him, and also Governor John Connor, Kani of Delaware, that you also had a pleasure to work with. Right? Can you speak?
So I wasn't sure, you know, the kind of what the rules were here. I didn't want to be dropping names and stuff like that, but you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, in the history of this vision of the Delaware Global African Center, it was Matt Meyer, who is currently our county executive, who stepped up and said, I want to help you get a place. And he's not only saying that, he's putting, you know, money into it, up to $3 million into it. We have our senator Coons, you know, has also is helping us by making a recommendation for $500,000, you know, into this. So these are endorsements of the concept and the support for our community. Otherwise, these elected officials, they could care less. They could say, we don't care. But it turns out that they actually do care. And so they are not just saying it, but they are investing in it with us. They are co-investing, if you will, in the project, in the vision, and by making available funding and all of that in support of the project. So I'm hoping that the rest of us, you talked about stakeholders before. The reality is that everybody is really a stakeholder. Mm. Everybody who is a person of African descent, who is a part of the African diaspora, you are a stakeholder. And I'm hoping that you see yourself as such. And as a stakeholder, therefore, any way that you can help assist in the upliftment of Africa, hopefully you will capitalize on that opportunity and do it. And we think this is an opportunity that presents itself that people can leverage. We are open to working with people. You don't have to be a Delaware resident for us to work with you. As a matter of fact, a lot of the people we're working with don't live in Delaware. Some live in Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland. Even some live as far away as Africa. There are people who come here and they see what we're doing. And when they go back to Africa, they continue to maintain connections with us and all of that. So everybody's a stakeholder. And we really invite everybody, you know, to try and learn what we're doing in hopes of perhaps contributing to it.
Yeah, actually, your work is really commendable because I have had the opportunity to meet some dignitaries like from African governments who have also, I think, attended some of the Delaware African and Caribbean Affairs Commission programs, and they have spoke highly of the work that this group actually does.
As a matter of fact, and again, you know, we don't have to toot our own horns, but sometimes it's good to share information with people. I've had discussions with several African ambassadors, as an example, about the vision behind the Delaware Global African Center. And they, all of them, independently, all of them are very supportive of it. Because they do believe that it is going to help them, even in the work that they do in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
They believe it's going to help them there, let alone, you know, what we can do in Africa. So they see that and they like it. And in fact, last year when we did the tourism fair, that was one of the reasons we brought in a lot of embassies, you know, to come and see what is going on in hopes of then getting their engagement as we do the work. Because like I said, this is capital intensive and all of that. And we're going to need a lot of the different stakeholders to know what the vision is and how they can, you know, connect and help to realize the vision. So we're doing another similar thing this year, right? Yes. We're doing
I was going to ask you about that when you mentioned it, talking about the Tourism Fair and Economic Summit. Yeah, can you go ahead and speak on that?
Sure.
And then how can people actually register or participate in this?
Okay. So, thank you so much. So, what we did last year, we're doing it this year, but we're supercharging it, if you will. So, we're supercharging it, and we are leveraging the opportunity of the presented by the United Nations General Assembly, which is going to start in New York next week. So it's going to bring in, you know, most global leaders, you know, to New York and all that. So we feel that because a lot of these leaders are going to be in New York already, we will leverage that opportunity to try and bring them down to Delaware to socialize to them the vision that we have and how they can fit into it, make it happen, partner with us. We really need partners. That's what this is really all about. We're not going to do it all by ourselves, just like they're not going to be able to accomplish, you know, perfect governance by themselves. So we have, so on the 26th and 27th of September, which is in about 3.5 weeks or something. Yeah, this thing kicks off, okay? And people can certainly learn more by, you know, Googling summit2024.delawareafricacoalition.org. So if you put summit2024.delawareafricacoalition.org, it will take you to our website and you will see, you know, the various things that we have planned there. On the 25th, we are giving our female influencers, because the thing here is, as they say, behind or beside every successful man is a woman. So we have some amazing African female leaders, female influencers, young, old, and all of that. So the first ladies are going to be coming to Delaware on the 25th. Okay, and that'll be their forum to look at empowerment of women, girl child education and empowerment and stuff. Because one of the problems we have in Africa, and this is where some aspect of our culture that actually is an impediment to our development, is that we overlook our women.
Yes.
So right there, and if you look at it on average, if you just assume that women and men, there's 50-50 that make up the population. When you're overlooking women, that means you're taking 50% of your population and you're saying, oh, that we don't have to get anything from you.
Yeah.
So now you're already playing with half of your half of your potential. Yes. So we want to make sure that our women, our men, our young, our old, everybody is engaged, because the kind of development that Africa needs is going to require everybody participating and engaged. So on the 25th, again, in Wilmington, Delaware, we give them an opportunity to do that. And then the summit starts from morning to night on the 26th, which is a Thursday, and 27th as well. Then we're going to have a banquet, a gala night to sort of celebrate some people among us.
Yeah, the DuPont, Hotel DuPont.
Hotel DuPont, yes, yes. And all that information, in fact, is available on our website, summit2024.delawareafricacoalition.org. One important thing that I want to mention to people is that if anybody is coming in and is going to need hotel reservation, please, 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 please make sure you book your hotel, even if you're not sure you're coming, but book your hotel before the 10th of September. Because the discount rates, you know, so if you can imagine, I don't know, I'm sure you're familiar with Hotel DuPont. It is, yes. It is a five-star hotel. The room rates are roughly $600 to $1,200 a night. But we have a rate of about $219, okay? Mm-hmm. Yes. $219 or $269. So if you book before the 10th, that's what you get. And you're not going to be charged anything or whatever. You're not going to be financially accountable until you actually use the room. So I want to encourage people to make sure that they make their hotel reservations and then, you know, before the 10th, because that's the cutoff date that we have.
Yeah. And then also one aspect of it that I read is that you have entertainment available.
Oh, there is an entertainment, celebrable. And in fact, it's like, I don't know, what do I call it? Is it a hip hop or R&B? I don't know which one it is. You probably know better than I do, but you don't want to miss it.
You don't want to miss that one. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Hopefully we can get him on this platform through you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's certainly something. Yes, if you want to talk to him, sure, we can talk to him and see whether he'll be interested. He's presently though in Atlanta, so it may be but we can do it the same way that we're doing this, which is Zoom. So yeah,
absolutely, because I believe the African musicians are also playing their part in spearheading causes for Africa. So
the African musicians, African entertainers are really, we have world-class, if you will, musicians now. So it is not unusual for you to hear an African music on a U.S. radio, right? That's good. But we need to leverage that to continue to improve Africa. And that's where the challenge lies.
Yes. So this summit actually is very impressive because for me it falls within the Pan-African cooperation among African nations and the diaspora. Also, you know, some of those other initiatives I'd be like, you know, the year of the retain in Ghana, and I know there are other ones that are going on between the diaspora and Africa and the Caribbeans as well. Yeah, so this is a very laudable event.
In fact, the year of return in Ghana has also spurred similar activities elsewhere. There is a similar thing going on now in Senegal.
Yes.
But some of the people behind that initiative in Senegal, where they are driving people to go and establish homes in Senegal, they will be at the conference. They will be at the summit. Okay. A similar thing is going on in Sierra Leone. Okay. So all these people are going, and a lot of them are African Americans who are here, who are partnering with continental Africans to drive these initiatives. And that's the kind of partnership that we're going to need in order to be able, you know, to sustain the drive for the development of Africa. It's going to require partnership, and some people are doing it. What we are doing is a part of it. And so we invite people to come out and certainly learn and see how they can contribute. It's going to take everybody's effort. I can tell you that. It's going to do that.
Yes. Well, so just based on discussion and everything that's going on in Africa, there's a lot going on that is very impressive. That brings me to where people sometimes still think of Africa as a dark continent, you know, over many years. And the narrative or the perception about Africa and the Caribbeans has been so negative for so long. Okay. How do we, I don't even want to use, say, changing, but is there a counter measure to this narrative to highlight the good things that are going on in Africa?
You're absolutely right. Yes. And this is why, part of why I'm saying everybody's a stakeholder. This narrative has been so perpetrated that even some of us Africans have come to believe it as the norm. But you know what? I think it was Chinua Achebe who said, until the lion learns how to write, the hunter will always write the story of their encounter. Right? The hunter, you see? So that story that you're talking about was written by somebody else.
Exactly.
And so you and me and all of us Africans, people of African descent, have to take control of that narrative. You're talking about changing the narrative. Yes, use that. That's what needs to happen. We need to change the narrative. Change the narrative in a lot of ways, in significant ways. As an example, if you and me decide that we're going to meet at 2 o'clock, let us meet at 2 o'clock, not 2:30.
Exactly.
I'm saying something as simple as that. Okay, you know, we want to meet at 2 o'clock. If you are meeting a Caucasian or somebody from somewhere else, chances are you hold yourself to a higher standard. Why would you now hold yourself to a lower standard simply because you're dealing with me? Don't do that. And this is one of the reasons that, you know, people get in, you know, they're like, oh, you have this Oyibo mentality. I'm like, no, it's not an Oyibo mentality, because they do not own what is good.
Yeah.
All of us own what is good. So respect is not an Oyibo thing. Mm-hmm. Respect is just showing up when you said you're going to show up, doing what you said you're going to do, things like that. It's just you, first and foremost, respecting yourself.
Yes.
Before you can even respect somebody else. So if you don't care that you are going to be there when you said you're going to be there, you're not respecting yourself. Forget about me for the time being. So many of us need to change that mindset and then realize that, hey, in order to change that narrative, it's going to involve us changing our attitude to the way we interact with each other. And some things as basic as just showing up in time. That's it. show up. You said you're going to show up. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So another input of yours I would like to seek is, do you believe like African can come to a point where they will receive like a win-win agreements on a global stage? And for example, right, we know that there is a fight for Africa between the West and China. Okay, so in the past, when African government negotiate contracts, majority of the benefits went to the foreign countries. Do you think Africa is at a position where we can actually leverage our resources to negotiate win-win agreements?
Hey, absolutely. Why not? That's where you and me come in. That's why I'm talking about the African diaspora, right? So let's assume that, and I'm not saying all of our African brothers and sisters are like this. Let's assume that over there, people don't know what is good. That's where you and me come in, okay? To show them that, look, in negotiating, you have, first of all, you have resources. And a lot of people say Africa is a poor continent, okay? How can you be a poor continent when the West is flocking to Africa? When China is flocking to Africa? Generally, people don't go to where there is poverty. People generally don't go to where they will not gain anything of benefit, anything of value. People don't go there. So the problem here is that maybe we don't understand the value that we hold, which is why we think that somebody who's coming to Africa to take our resources is doing us a favor. They're not doing us a favor. And so you're not going to get to the win-win situation you're talking about until you understand that you are bringing value to this table, to this discussion, to this negotiation. Right. Once you understand you're bringing value, then you say, well, I have value, but you also have something that I need.
Right.
So then how can we exchange in a fair and the equitable manner? That's a win-win you're talking about. But first of all, you have to know that you have value. And unfortunately, many of us do not think or realize that we have value, which is why when people come and they, you know, you know, in fact, when we see people, we are afraid of them, unfortunately.
Yeah,
you have to understand that you have value. You have something that this person wants.
Yes, and that brings me to, I know you've been involved with a lot of youthful African organization, including like the Mandela Fellowship and the Ali and the Startup Africa, where you were actually recently awarded an honors. I think I was at that event briefly. So, do you think the younger African leaders are better equipped to fight these battles where they will put Africa at the forefront? Obviously, the older generation have played their part, right? But we need the younger generation to take it to a next step, and also implement some changes of doing things, because as people define insanity, is that if you keep doing the same thing and get and expecting different results, that's what people define as insanity. So right. Where do your involvement with this youthful leadership, does it give you hope, and why?
It gives me a tremendous amount of hope. In fact, that was, in my view, a masterstroke by President Obama, who initiated this concept that, you know, we're going to take, excuse me, 1,000. I mean, you know, some people will say, what is 1,000 in a population of 1.4 billion people? Okay, good. But you say 1,000, even if it is less, let's say 500, 700. But the concept here is that over a period of time, you will build up a sizable population of leaders who can then work, learn how to work together, partner together, collaborate and stuff, and then begin to work the way they are supposed to. If you look at America, America never talks of, even though America is a superpower, but America never talks about doing anything without saying our allies. You're always going to hear America and their allies. Even if America is providing 90% of the resources that are being used in a particular situation, they always say America and their allies. There's a reason for that. So for me, that concept that President Obama actually engineered and initiated and supported, and that remains effective today, is really a something that, you know, gives me a lot of hope. When you interact with the people, granted that you're talking about the best of the best here, creme de la creme, so to speak, if you're gonna have to screen, let's say, 50,000 applications to get 1,000, you can imagine that that 1,000 is going to reflect really the best in their various fields and stuff. And so I am very hopeful. I'm very excited about interacting with these young men and women in terms of what they are doing. I'm very encouraged about what they are doing, even in the face of so much hardship, in the face of so much adversity that the society and the environment places on them. They continue to persevere. That's what you're going to need to do, right? You know, so let's look at history. When the explorers, they call them explorers, I don't know what they were exploring, but when the explorers were coming, you know, they faced a lot of adversity.
Yes.
When they were coming to Africa, one of the most notable adversities was the mosquito. The mosquito was eating them alive, and they were dying of, Did they stop?
No, they did not.
They did not stop. And then eventually what happened? They eventually came in, and then they colonized us. You see the problem? Yeah. They colonized us, and up until now, they are basically using our resources at, you know, subsidized rates. In fact, if sometimes they are even paying us anything. So that exploration that was done by people 300, 400, 500 years ago, the people who live now are enjoying those benefits because they're getting these resources in order to support their societies and stuff. So we as Africans need to be thinking along those lines as well. We shouldn't give up in the face of daunting challenges. We should not give up. We can't give up. And so the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program, you know, gives me hope, a lot of hope, because I've interacted with these young men and women, and they are amazing. You have to experience them to really appreciate what they are doing and how you're doing. And so we are supporting them as well. So remember, I said to you before that we have partners, members of our organization don't all live in Delaware. There are people who live around the country, but there are also people from Africa. So some of these fellows remain in contact with us, in connection with us, and in partnership with us. So that's what it's going to take.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. All right. So, Doctor, you have won many professional and civic awards, right? So out of all these awards, which one is very close to your heart and why? And then also, what is next on your journey?
So let me start with what's next on the journey. What's next on the journey is the Delaware Global African Center, because of what we can do with that. Okay. So as far as I'm concerned, you know what they say, an unexamined life isn't worth living. You know, many of us are just existing. You're not here to just eat food and then die. Right. No, if that's all you're doing, you're just eating food, drinking water, and then waiting until the day you die, you may want to re-examine what you're doing with your life. God has given you life for a particular purpose. Use it to do something tangible. Leave a legacy if you can. And so for me, what's the potential that the Delaware Global African Center initiative has, if it can be realized, I'll be very, very happy. Okay? There are major challenges there, but like I said before, We don't do this thing. We are not doing easy things. To lift Africa up is going to require a lot. And so that's what I would like to do. So the kind of award, I've won professional awards and things of that nature. Those are from your technical competence and things of that nature. But the one about the Lifetime Achievement Award that was given, in fact, by Startup Africa, is one that is kind of, very special to me, because it is a recognition of by people. These are not your peers, but they are the community recognizing that what you are doing or what you have done is valuable.
Yes.
Okay. It is that recognition. And so for me, that's really a very, very special honor. And we want to continue, to impact society, because that's really all we're supposed to really do, So if you look at the people who lived 200, 300, 400, 500 years ago, how many of them do we remember now? The people we remember are the people who made impact.
Yes.
That's it. And it is that impact now that says to somebody, okay, who started this or who did this? And then from there, then you make a connection to who actually did. So that's kind of the way that I'm looking at it. If we can achieve the establishment of the Delaware Global African Center, I'd be happy.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have any final message, uplifting message for our audience?
Yeah, I really do. And the uplifting message is, excuse me, do not think that there is nothing you can do. Because guess what? There is something you can do.
Yes.
Every single one of us. Don't say, okay, well, I'm not the president of the United States. I don't have power. I can't do anything. That's not true. You have power. Guess what? You as a, let's say you live in the United States. You as somebody who lives in the United States, as a voter, if you are of voting age, that vote is a tremendous amount of power that people have, but oftentimes people misuse. People don't even realize that that vote is a tremendous amount of power. And I'm hoping that people this time around are not going to waste that vote, because if we don't elect the right people, we will all suffer the consequences.
Right.
So that vote makes you a very powerful person. So use it.
Yes. Powerful message. Very uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Kelechi Lawrence, it's been a pleasure having you here. I want to thank you for making time, sharing your great and inspiring stories and accomplishments on this platform. I believe it will go a long way to uplift people's countenance. And as the saying goes, say something positive and you will see something positive.
There you go.
I hope to bring you back again. Because I know we've just scratched the surface. What you have in the pipeline right now would definitely trigger a lot of discussion, which I believe I need to bring you up here. So all I request is an open door policy to your busy schedule, and I can have you back here again.
I would love to. In fact, this is, again, to have a platform like this to share what we're doing. You are doing also a very important and needed service for our community. And so, I would love to sometime in the future come and give you an update where we are in pursuing some of these dreams that we are pursuing. So thank you also for what you are doing, because bringing people and telling their stories, hopefully somebody will learn something. Maybe one or two people become motivated, energized, inspired. Then it's worth it. So I applaud you for what you're doing, and I encourage you to continue to do it. And we will support any way we can, including coming to share our story on your platform.
Thank you, Doctor. That is very uplifting. And to our listeners, a big thank you for staying tuned with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Uplift Chronicles. And please leave us your feedback on our social media platform. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Uplift Chronicles. I hope you found inspiration in today's stories and the spirit of upliftment. Remember, every life has the power to inspire change, and every story is a thread in the rich tapestry of our shared heritage. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly subscribe and leave a review, and share it with someone who could use a little upliftment in their life. Follow us on social media for more updates and join the conversation. Until next time, keep uplifting and stay inspired. Signing off, this is Kofi Dake.